This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulsher.
I will welcome to another edition of Reinvention Radio. Steve Ulsher, really glad you are here and super excited to meet our guest today. Actually, this is the first time we're meeting, and I love meeting new people. I especially love meeting new people who are up to some really cool shit. And that would certainly describe Rob. So, without much further ado, I'm gonna read you his bio, but Rob will tell you a little bit more about himself in a second here. But this is kind of what you see if you went to the page where it said Rob Scott is. But like I said, we'll have Rob tell us a little bit more. But just so you know who Rob Scott is, he's a master level coach who creates digital products and training programs for world changers that help them break through their deepest limits and become incredibly effective, wealthy, and deeply fulfilled, which is like totally cool. But what I love most about you is that he's really known for hijacking people's minds, and I really dig that, rewiring their limiting beliefs and leaving them completely transformed. So, I'm going to let you, like I said, tell you a little bit more about what you're doing, but just in case, for whatever reason, you lose the podcast here, let me give you Rob's best email. Well, not even email. I'll send you to his website right now, which is robscott.com. So just in case, for whatever reason, you tune out here, which I know you won't, but let me give it to you right now, which is robscott, robscott.com. So, Rob, what do you really do?
Well, first off, thanks for that intro, man. It's awesome to be here. I'm really happy to be talking to you today. I am really deeply interested in finding out the shortcuts to massive human change, right? So changing how people see the world and how they think, changing behaviors in people, right? I think a lot of people want different events to happen in their life. They want to have different states and different feelings about life and their results and all that. And, a lot of people come to me and they want different behaviors, and those kind of relate to each other, right? Like the events that we get kind of inform how we feel about ourselves and how we think, and that informs our behavior and all that stuff. And many people feel really stuck and sort of in a loop of like, wow, I feel like I'm still in the same place. Like, why can't I break through? Why can't I get to this new thing? So I've really spent a lot of time trying to figure out what are the real things that work, the real ways that people can effectively change not only their behavior, but their results, the way they feel about things, their own fulfillment, that kind of stuff.
Gotcha. So let's kind of dive into that for a second here. First and foremost, why do you think so many people are stuck, right? I mean, we don't set out to be stuck. We don't set out to have these sort of normal lives or these sort of status quo existences, if you will. You work with a lot of people, man. Why do you think people end up stuck? What kind of triggers that?
Yeah, it's a protective mechanism that works really well for our survival, but it doesn't really help us thrive that much. And so we're set up with all these cognitive biases, and we're set up with a subconscious mind that is really much more interested in moving toward the familiar than moving toward things that are challenging and scary for us. And so any kind of exceptional behavior or results that you're going to get in the world are going to need you to grow past your comfort edge. And so really, as most entrepreneurs either know or will soon know, the game is really about how do I push my edge and do things that are new to me and do them well and consistently. And what most people,
counterintuitive though, right? I mean, because most people don't ever want to just kind of do what is normal, what's safe. Don't most people innately want to do their own thing, or do most people innately want to just follow the herd?
So I think it really breaks down into a difference between what your conscious mind wants, which is actually not a very powerful part of your mind, and what your subconscious mind wants. And not to get all geeky on that, 2 minutes into the podcast, but we all consciously want all this growth. We can imagine change for all ourselves, you know, in massive ways, and we daydream about that and we want that. But when it really comes down to doing the things, we get stuck with a lot of often very unconscious fears, right? Fear of failure, fear of, you know, what if I try this and it doesn't work? What if I, you know, tell people I'm going to do this and then they don't see me doing it? I won't be consistent in society, all that. And then we actually have a lot of fears of success that people don't often really realize are there. But success can feel like, man, I'm busy now. What if I were to, you know, 2x or 10x my business, I wouldn't even be able to keep up? Or what if I sold this thing and it really isn't as good as I say it is, or whatever, right? So we have all these different myriad of fears that are really on a very unconscious or subconscious level keeping us playing a similar game that we played yesterday.
So people really are, and it's interesting, right? I mean, I'd love to get your take on this. I mean, do you think people are more afraid of success or more afraid of failure?
I think it's a combination of both for most people. And I think that it's obvious to us that we're afraid of failing, right? We can all sort of think of that. We'd prefer succeeding. And the one that's a little bit less obvious and a little bit more counterintuitive is that a lot of us are really afraid of success. We're afraid of being too big. We're afraid that we don't deserve it. We're afraid that, you know, it's not going to work out. We'll fail. We'll stretch too far and it'll be a big catastrophe. And it's not just one fear. You know, it's not just success or failure. It's much more nuanced than that. And there's a lot of things that we need to overcome. I often teach entrepreneurs what it is to effectively sell, right? To really convey something confidently and well that you believe in, that you want to, you know, move out into the market. And you can get past, you know, getting the confidence to make the call, but then like not make the offer at the end of the call, you know? And so there's all these little things that people really need to overcome. And a lot of that has to do with what your self-concept is.
Right, and so one of the things... I was just going to say, I mean, let's kind of blow through that for a second here, because, you know, what I have found is that when people achieve a certain milestone, whatever that milestone might be, that they slow down. And it's like that hustle, you know, that reason for being, that like, this is really what I want and now I have it. It's like, you know, you get that fine girl, you know, or that fine guy, you know, whatever your thing is, you know, and it's just like, okay, now I got it. What's next? You know, which is why I think infidelity is like such a rampant part of our society, you know, because we live in this society of never really being fulfilled or becoming complacent, right? And so it's a question that I've always wondered, and maybe you've got a good take on this, and I'd love to hear your perspective on what do you think, when that challenge is achieved, what do you think happens for most people?
Well, I mean, you said a lot of interesting things there, and there's a couple things that I kind of want to address. It's as if, you know, fulfillment and success don't often go hand in hand. The beginning of success usually leads to more fulfillment than no success, right? That beginning amount of achievement is really important. We've got to be able to pay our own way. We've got to make a certain amount of money. But after a certain amount of success, more success doesn't do that much more for us, right? And in our culture here in the West, we haven't really mastered fulfillment. We haven't really mastered, you know, being present and mindful and happy. You know, there's a very stereotypical kind of idea of people that are very, very successful. Many of them are really overweight. They're balding, they're sweaty, they're angry, and they've got millions and they just want more millions. And it's almost like they're chasing something and they can't quite get there, right?
Is that a mommy thing, by the way? I mean, is that like a mommy and daddy will never approve, so I just got to kind of keep going?
Yeah, I think it is, but I also think it's a misconception with the human animal and how we perceive time, right? I think that time, and if you really want to get weird about this, right, we have the wrong paradigm about how time works, right? They're really... past and future are constructs of thought. They're effective planning things, and there's a certain level of, you know, figuring out what's going to come, but we've never actually been to the future. There's no such thing as that. We've never been to the past. Even if we imagine the past, we're still just imagining it in this moment. And so, you know, a lot of what I help people do is really think very differently about time and about being really richly and deeply in the moment. And a lot of people hear that and then they go, oh, he's going to have me like meditating and sitting and doing nothing, right? And that's a misunderstanding too, because there's this really, really deeply fulfilling way to kind of arrive here where we actually feel arrived. We get off that like treadmill of time or that sense of becoming that never ends, right? The root of that is whether it came from mommy or daddy, and often it does, it's really a sense of I'm not enough, right? Or this isn't enough, or I'm not there yet, right? There's all these sort of stories of, you know, I haven't achieved it yet. And then it's a moving target. So even when I do achieve that, I haven't ever learned how to be fulfilled or be in the moment. And so the target moves. And so we end up like chasing after it. We end up on this treadmill and we really never know how to stop. And if you train the brain like that, just achieve, 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 and never really fully appreciate in a mature way, your brain is not built. It's as if that muscle atrophies and you really have no idea how to be fulfilled. The counterintuitive thing though is in our culture, we think that fulfillment or satiation of any kind like stops drive. And that's actually not true. From that place of fulfillment and wholeness and happiness where I do feel like I am enough, where I do feel like I have enough, when we can really master that, we actually get more creative and we actually have a better time creating from that place. And so, you know, if you think of fulfillment, a guy like Eckhart Tolle teaches that pretty well, right? There's people that sort of master talking about presence and fulfillment and what it means to be happy in the moment. And then there's success. And there's guys like, I don't know, Les Brown and Tony Robbins and guys that master that. It's really important to have both, because if you have success without fulfillment, it's completely worthless. And if you have fulfillment without success, it's not very powerful, right? And so we actually want to figure out how do you marry those two? And to me, that's the next level of consciousness for humans to figure out so that we can really, really be okay, happy, contented, and deeply successful in what we're trying to do and what we're trying to grow.
Yeah, and wouldn't that be an interesting place to live in? But, you know, the cynics will say, you know, it would be great to be present and just enjoy this moment. But, you know, I got to fucking make next month's rent. You know, I got to put food on the table. You know, I got my kids crying because, you know, they don't have this, that, or the other. So how do we kind of balance then that fine line of living in the present moment and feeling fulfilled with still wanting and in some cases needing more than we actually have?
Sure. So let me be clear. You are living in the present, right? It's not like, how do we start to do that? You are doing that whether you're aware of it or not, right? That like, that's actually what's happening. So the question is, can you be fulfilled in that process, right? Can you be fulfilled while facing challenges? Can you be happy and centered and mature and okay while you deal with the realities of life, right? We have a lot of stories that we're taught that problems are bad and that all these things, you know, what if your problems weren't bad at all and they were just the next thing that you had to do? I mean, that's a paradigm that literally I live in and I teach people to live in, that's so incredibly valuable that it's, you know, it ends up being out of left field for a lot of people because they think they want something else. But the things that they think they want don't actually solve the problems that they're experiencing in most cases, right? The problems that most of them are experiencing is I'm not there yet, or this isn't enough yet. And that drives this, I've got to get there. But the reality is there is no there. What we actually have to do is we have to get here and actually really be fulfilled and learn how to do that. And I have tools and tech. I mean, this is what I do, right? I help people do that. And then from that place, it's as if I'm asking people to hold the paradox of this, right? Everything is perfect and there's tons to do, right? There's a way to actually sit back and look at life and really kind of appreciate it for all its wonder and all that it is. And then from that place, also kind of have that mind of critique and go, you know, I've got to do that. I've got to go make the bills. I've got to do this thing. I've got to do that. But I don't have to be, you know, in a difficult place doing that. I can be actually really kind of excited about what I'm doing. I can line that up with what I most care about so that every day is really a deeply fulfilling, happy experience.
So, I mean, kind of like a light switch. It's either on or it's off, right? So do you find that by the time most people come to you or actually entertain this conversation, that light switch is already on, that they're looking for that shift? No.
No, well, I'm not sure I understood what you mean by light shift. I mean, this truly is an enlightenment, right? What I actually teach people is how that they can see. I'd love to give you a story or a metaphor for this.
Yeah, okay? That might be helpful. Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. So essentially what's going on in humanity presently, and it's we're amazing. You know, I'm like, I'm so impressed with us. There's no critique of humanity in a negative way. But when I look at it, what I see is that we're all walking around in our own private delusions, right? And we all look at the world through our own lenses. But the problem is we're not aware that we're looking through our lenses. We think that we're seeing truth out there. So let me just kind of break that down. If you think of a lens, and I don't know if you wear glasses or contacts or anything, right?
No, if you don't,
you've probably looked through a telescope or a microscope or something like that, right? The function of a lens is to alter what we're looking at. That's like what it's built to do. And so people understand that. But what they also normally don't understand is that a lens is built to be invisible. It doesn't function if I have raindrops on my glasses or scratches on my glasses or something like that, the lens no longer functions. If I even just take my glasses off and kind of look at them, they don't function. They're built to be looked through without really any concern about them, right? Well, that's how our beliefs and our thought structures are in our mind. They're actually warping how we see things, and they, as a perfect lens should, they actually work really well, and they're outside of most of our awareness. And the problem with that is many of our lenses end up sounding like, you know, I'm not good enough, I'll never succeed, I can only make, you know, $100,000 a year, whatever. We have all these like beliefs and opinions about ourselves that are often in the background. We might hear some of them, but many of them are out there and they're not even in our awareness. So when people come to me, they're usually not getting results. They're really, really miserable. They're really, really frustrated. Oftentimes they're an entrepreneur who's trying to start a business because that's a certain endeavor that doesn't, you know, you have to lead yourself, right? And so there's a little bit more difficult calling in that. And they don't know what's wrong, right? They're like, I'm not sure, but I can tell by my results that I'm not where I want to be. And I'm upset about that. And maybe I'm even anxious. Maybe I go to bed like worried about it. I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I definitely need more sales. So in that regard, you know, there are some tactical important things that they need to learn to get better at, possibly. But I submit that they also need to become a better human being, because the thing that's showing up for them in all their failures is them, right? And so in what way are they showing up and self-sabotaging themselves? In what way are they showing up and doing this? And what I help them do is I help them see their lenses and really change their prescription or optimize it so that they can actually have the most useful thought, know how to be confident, you know, show up in a way that's like powerful and do all that. So I edit the lenses. And that's what I talk about when I go, I kind of hijack people's brains and help them to think much more effectively, much more calmly, much more, you know, fulfilled and all that stuff.
Yeah. I think it plays exactly to them what I was asking, which is, I mean, they've got to be sort of in that state of mind where they're ready to move in a direction that is different from where they sit right now. Right.
Yeah, I mean, they have to want change.
So how do you get people to make that, how do you get people to kick in that desire, to want to make that change when, you know, I mean, let's take your dad, for instance, right? I don't know. I mean, you know, you got to go old school, right? I know, like with my dad, if I had this conversation with dad, you know, he'd be like, you know, get that woo-woo kind of crap out of here. You know, I mean, like he's not ready for that. And, you know, I find that with, especially as you look at some of the older generations, I mean, I'm 45, you know, certainly as you look at people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, for sure, I don't think they give a hoot really about making these sort of shifts that you're talking about. How do you convince someone who's not ready or who doesn't care, you know, that this type of shift would actually be of benefit to them?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I make no effort to help anybody who doesn't want to be helped. I make no effort to change minds of people that don't want to change their mind or to look at things differently, right? So, you know, my dad would not be a client of mine necessarily, although, and we've had every spectrum of relationship in my life, you know, my dad and I, but recently we're really, really close. And while he would probably never be a client of mine, he did say to me, as he was looking at some of my testimonials and stuff, he's like, I should have hired you a really long time ago, which was incredibly flattering to me.
That's about a compliment from dad as I think anyone's going to get, right?
It really is. You know, certainly our generation fathers, you know, that's as nice as it gets and meant a lot to me. But, you know, here's the deal. I think a universal rule is you can't install the desire in somebody, or it doesn't bear a lot of fruit to try to install the desire. So as much as I would love to share these concepts and ideas with everybody, and even though I think they might be useful, if somebody doesn't want to learn it or doesn't care, that's not who I help. I'm helping people that are like, I want results. I heard from so-and-so, you are, you know, do this incredible thing. What do you do, right? And what I call it, I mean, the name of this thing is, I call it identity shifting. And the reason that I call it that is that when I ask people, like, okay, there's a guy over there that's getting all the results you want. He's got the relationship, he's got the money, he's got the car, he's got the business, he's got the behaviors and the habits, right? Why aren't you that guy? And a lot of people will say, if they get honest about it, you know, I'm not him. Like, I don't know how he does that. I don't know what it is. And I'll just break it down. That person's thinking different thoughts. That person has different behaviors and habits, right? They take different actions because of it, and they get different results because of it. And so what most people are trying to do when they get new habits, whether it's going to the gym every morning or starting to make sales calls or doing things more entrepreneurially, most of them don't feel like they're that yet. It's that same problem of time, right? It's like, I'm not an entrepreneur yet. I need to take another class. Or I'm not really an athlete yet. I need to do this thing. In fact, if you think about it, when we're trying to put our willpower on something to do it, the reason that it takes willpower is that it doesn't feel like us yet, right? If I have to like muster willpower to go to the gym every day, that's because in my identity, I don't really think of myself as going to the gym every day. But if that habit sticks, it's because I've become somebody who actually goes, yeah, I just go to the gym every day. Like, that's what I do. It's a part of what I do. It's a part of my identity. So what I've really realized is that instead of focusing solely on willpower and trying to get people to wrestle with themselves, which is successful sometimes, and it's kind of important, but it's not very effective and it's not very fast, I go in and I change their self-concept. I change the way they think and talk to themselves so that they can have and install a new identity, right? And they can actually explore what's possible, because our identity changes all the time. Your 10-year-old self is no longer here. You're not that guy anymore. Your 21-year-old self is not here anymore. But for most of us, our self-concept isn't consciously created. We don't consciously go, you know, I want to be this amazing entrepreneur and athlete or whatever, right? And what I'm here to tell you is that it's possible to do that. You can actually go in and edit some files and really change how you feel about yourself and what's possible for yourself. Cool. And it's the shortest, most effective, most permanent way to change somebody that I've ever seen or known about.
Yeah, Matt. So let's do this. We'll take a quick break. And sure. When we come back, what I want to do is I want to talk about actually some tangible, like, you can do this today kind of thing to help people move in a direction that maybe they didn't feel like they could go or were not comfortable in going in that direction. So maybe we can hone in here on some tangible things that people can do to get their different results, right? I mean, you know, the definition of insanity, you know, you do the same thing when expecting a different result, sure. Blah, 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 right? So yeah. Let's move towards some tangible actions, activities, ways of thinking, et cetera, that people can look to implement on a daily basis, and that will help them garner different results. So we'll take a quick break with Reinvention Radio, and we'll be right back after this.
One person has the power to change the world, impact millions of lives, and leave a legacy for lifetimes to come. That person is you. In the New York Times bestseller, What Is Your What?, Steve Ulcher, award-winning author and founder of the Reinvention Workshop, reveals his proven process that has helped thousands of men and women discover, share, and monetize the one thing they were born to do. Grab your free copy now at www.whatisyourwhat.com/free. That's www.whatisyourwhat.com/free.
All right, cool. Well, if you are just joining us, which I don't know how that would be the case since this is a podcast, and unless you hit like pause at the beginning and then fast forwarded like 22 minutes here.
Yeah.
But just in case you're just joining us, I'm talking to Rob Scott. RobScott.com, RobScott.com. Lots of very interesting things there for you to take a look at. And before we left for break, we were talking about, you know, really how to get that shift going, you know, the breakthroughs, if you will, that shift of identity, I think is actually the terminology that you use, Rob. Mm-hmm. And so I did have one question that I wanted to jump into prior to talking about some of the tangible you know, things that someone can do on a daily basis here. But
sure.
Talk to me about the balance between living your purpose and knowing what it is that you were truly born and created to do, and reconciling that with being paid extraordinarily well to do it, right? Because I think that there are a number of people, and I've talked to them. So, you know, there are people who feel guilty, right? Mm. They just flat out feel guilty about exploiting, and that's how they feel, about exploiting what comes most naturally to them. Like, I have been given a gift, and for me to, you know, capitalize on what I view as my natural talents would be sacrilegious, right? I mean, or something of that nature. Do you see the two as mutually exclusive, or how do you help people reconcile the fact that they should, in fact, be comfortable and pursue, you know, the almighty dollar, if that's what we're going to call it?
Sure. You know, I think that if somebody's, you know, it's funny that guilt really lives in the past, and anxiety and fear live in the future, right? And you may have a present sort of sense of guilt about something. What I would suggest to people is that they need to kind of move past that, right? They need to manage their emotions a little bit more strongly than that and get past it. I think what you're describing is probably rooted in something where they don't feel they deserve it, or they don't feel there's enough out there. And those are just stories, right? Those are just other lenses, right, that they're wearing that they really need to put down. Because one of the, you know, a much more useful idea, and that's one of the more tangible things that I try to teach, is that I'm actually not that interested in truth. I'm much more interested, because truth is weird. truth is very hard. This is a much deeper concept, and we can geek out on this if you want.
It's getting you all choked
up, man. Yeah, it is. It gets me, need a little bit of water.
Exactly.
truth is funky, and in the moment, because, you know, I might have the experience of, you know, I'm a loser, and or somebody might come to me and say, hey Rob, I'm a loser, right? And that's true. And I say, I'm not really interested in truth, because you might even have evidence of being a loser. If we're going to change you, your self-concept of I'm a loser really needs to change, right? So I'm much more interested in what's useful to think. And so if somebody's riddled with guilt, let's say, it's not useful, right? It's not helping them, it's not helping anybody else. Now obviously, if they're doing something that's truly hurting other people, or there's a real reason that they're guilty, guilt is a very effective emotion that should be used to let them know. But if it's just a rewiring because they're successful and they somewhere underneath don't feel that they deserve it, they need to literally rewrite that. And when we get into the tangible tips, I want to talk about rewriting some of these thoughts, some of these perceptions. The other thing that was wrapped in that question that you sent me, which I'd like to address just quickly, is this purpose concept, right? And I think when somebody really finds their purpose or decides what their purpose is, because I'd really like to switch the idea from, you know, it's not like we're trying to discover something that's the one thing that's our purpose. It's really, we're able to kind of claim that. We're able to author that ourselves and decide what's most important to us. And we're also able to change it, right, if we have new or different information. But I think a lot of people that teach or talk about purpose out there make a big, they don't distinguish it clearly enough from passion, okay? So if I could just take like 30 seconds to geek out on that, I'd like to talk about the difference between those two.
Yeah, man, I actually preach quite heavily on why you should never turn your passion into your career. So I'd love to hear your take.
Okay,
on
cool. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I'm not familiar with your stuff on that, but I'd love to know it. You know, I might be really passionate about basket weaving, and by that, you know, that might be something that just holds my interest. I think about it all the time. I want to be amazing at it, but I wouldn't say that's my purpose, because it's not helping anyone. There's no mission involved in that. There's nothing like that, right? Purpose is distinguished from that by purpose is when I'm deciding to serve something bigger than myself, right? And it doesn't have to be altruistic or you know, fluffy in any way. It just needs to be something a little bit bigger than ourselves. And, you know, I have this story that I tell about, you know, imagine a 50-year-old woman who's miserable. She drinks Pabst. She lives in a trailer park, and, you know, she doesn't have many friends.
Yeah, it's
and
nice the kids, to talk about my mom that way, Rob.
Yeah, there you go. Well, is it your mom? The kids go by and, like, you know, make fun of her and all that, right? Like, she's kind of miserable. And she's not connected to her purpose. She's not connected to anything. And then one day her friend asks her to come and go bowling with her. And in the
I
beginning
you were
of bowling,
say that one day her friend invites her to go to Landmark education. So
there you go. Yeah.
Or that. Yeah. Sorry. No. I'm going to enroll you, but sorry.
Yeah. Let's enroll you in bowling. Let's do bowling. Right. So they go out and there's like a group that bowls together or whatever. And the first day she's not very good. She's not really talented. But there's something in it that's enough. Right. And she decides to do it again. And she just says, okay, but she's still grumpy about it for a while, whatever, but she gets a little bit better at it for a while. That might be a passion of hers. She might want to like get better at bowling. Right. And so she starts to enjoy it. She thinks about it. She cares about it, whatever. But all of a sudden, something might change if she starts to go, you know what, guys, I'm going to accept money to get us new T-shirts for the team. And I'm going to call Sally on Tuesday and make sure she's there. Whether she knows it or not, she starts taking like a leadership role. That's enough to sort of have this kind of quality of purpose get in there, right? Because now she's deciding, because it feels good to her, to actually serve something that's just a little bit bigger than herself, right? And so she can actually have purpose in that. Now, if you went and you said, is this your life purpose? Is this way? She'd be like, no, she might not even be connected to it. But that's the aspect of purpose that really can pull us through difficult moments, pull us through deciding to do something, whether we get paid for it or not, because we just love it and care about it and we think it's important. Another thing to find our purpose or to get connected to that is often thinking about like what really bugs you out there, like what's really you think is wrong or offensive to you or whatever. Is there something you want to better? Is there, is there a cause that you care about or whatever? Because purpose does go all the way out to, the Gandhi and Martin Luther King level and everything in between. And so I think that it's for me, and if you you might have different ideas about this, but I think when you can marry up your purpose with your passion, right? Something that you're passionate about and really holds your interest and you care about. And you can do that in a way that's serving people that want to pay you for it so that you can make a ton of money doing it, so that you marry up passion, purpose, and profit all together, that there you can really commit, your life to what your kind of work is in the world and never feel like unhappy doing it, never feel, lost doing it or whatever. And even if you have bad months or it's tough, you're still really fulfilled because you're in your purpose, you're doing your thing and you're on a mission to, change something or serve something or help something. One other little notion about that, every 12-step program that deals with people that are the most dysfunctional, right, the most addicted, the hardest to do and all that, part of the reason that those things work is that right out of the beginning, they start asking people, hey, can you clean up the chairs? Can you come make the coffee? Eventually it's, hey, can you share your story? Can you eventually sponsor somebody else, right? There's a little bit of service to the thing that's just a little bit bigger than themselves. And for people that are out in the streets, totally dysfunctional, totally addicted, really want to make the bad choice again, oftentimes it's just that little commitment to something that's a little bit bigger than themselves that's, flips the switch and gets them to stay. And when they stay, often many times they're really, really bright and they build really, really successful lives. So for all the entrepreneurs out there that are just chasing the mighty dollar, that can work, right? I know a lot of really successful people, but oftentimes they're not necessarily fulfilled. If you can figure out how to make the almighty dollar while you're doing something that you really are passionate about and feel a purpose to do, that's a much bigger win, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And it's important enough to like care about figuring it out.
Yeah, and it's interesting, right? I mean, whenever I'm feeling just shitty for whatever reason about whatever's going on, or just, my business sucks, I need to go back and get a day job, these sort of things that sort of run rampant in my mind, pretty much every other hour, I think, at this stage of my life. I think that it always goes back for me to get out of my own head and go help somebody, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because as soon as you can get out of your own head and go help somebody, it really does, everything does, in fact, shift. And I love this expression. I'm sure you've heard it before, but a lot of people talk about how they don't have anything to share. There's nothing that they, can help others with or whatever it might be. And one of the things that I've heard that I love is, to a second grader, a fifth grader is a god.
Yeah, totally.
It's like there's always someone who is two steps or three steps behind you, and that's really where I have found that if you just start there in service in some way, that everything changes. And, there's a lot of different ways to do that. Even if it's just getting out of your house, you'll find that an old lady needs to be walked across the street, or you can hold the door open for people for an hour at the mall. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you can be of service without having to go out and create a whole career around it. But it does really kind of reset where your head is at. And I have found that in that in that reset, if you will, and really embracing the notion. One of the things that I say is that life starts over right now. You know,
yeah,
and it starts over again.
First off, yeah.
Right, I know, I saw that. Yeah, exactly. And it starts over again right now, you know. So that reset is incredibly powerful. And I know that you've got some tips and some strategies that you suggest that people incorporate to really change that identity, to change that mindset, right? So what are some practical things, even if it's just, I don't know, something people say to themselves, a mantra, or, you know, I know you've got these strategies. What can you rattle off maybe three strategies, practical tips for what people can start thinking about doing?
For sure. Before I do that, I just want to echo what you just said with that sort of reset. And to me, it's you were talking about kind of like getting out of your own head and helping somebody, getting out there. You know, for me, I used to be petrified, and I mean petrified of public speaking, right? Something like this wouldn't have been possible, you know, whatever, 20 years ago or something. And something changed when I got connected to, instead of thinking about me, right? I get a lot of entrepreneurs that I work with that are nervous to do a launch, or, you know, scared to go give a talk or something like that. Well, they're always focused on them when it's going on, right? When you can shift, and it's really just moving your awareness, right? In resetting to helping somebody else, it's really moving your awareness over to considering, you know, who am I helping? Like, who in this audience can I help? And how do I actually think about that instead of worrying about, like, what are they going to think of me? And so moving that attention over to your customer, to whoever you want to serve, all of a sudden gets you into action, right? It's not hard to launch when you start to really care about the people you're going to help. When you think about, what are my numbers going to be? What are people going to think of me, right? When it's me-centered, we get really frozen in a lot of ways. And we unfreeze when we start to think about somebody else. So I just wanted to echo, I'm in total agreement with you on that.
If I can just, and let's just kind of piggyback off of that for a second, which is, you know, I have found that even if you take it out of the people context, and put it to the person context, right? In terms of like going back to the idea of holding the door open at the mall. I mean, right? I mean, there's like, there's only one person that's going to go through that, you know, it's going to cross over from the dark world on the outside to the dark world on the inside of a mall. you know, and it's so, if you think about it from that standpoint of who is that one person that you're most compelled to serve, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with the what is your what framework, but, you know, it's the gifts, the vehicle, and the people. You know, it really does boil down to that one person. And I do find that when you talk, you know, especially online, because, you know, like right now, this conversation, in my way of thinking, is geared towards that one person who really needs to just make that conscious shift and just know in their heart and, you know in their head that they have the ability to make a different choice after they hit stop, you know, on this interview here, that they can do something different. And so that's, you know, that's who I'm talking to. And I have found for me that that's incredibly powerful to break it down even to that one person.
Yeah. Well, let's give them the tangible stuff. Let's talk about three steps to doing this and what's involved. And even if they just do the first step, they can get a big result. So the first one, and what I'm talking about are people who are self-sabotaging, people who can kind of hear in their mind, they say things to themselves like, this won't work out, or, you know, I'm never going to make the money. Even if it's not true 100%, right? Even if they say, you know, people don't like me, or everyone on Facebook, you know, isn't into me or whatever, right? Even if you were to interview them and they'd say, no, I don't really believe that, right? If that's even like 1% going on in your head, it's still bad software running around, right? So step one is awareness. Step one is just to literally become aware and like jot it down. Grab a piece of paper, spend 10 minutes. I'm not talking about, you know, a 12-day Vipassana meditation, but try to become aware of like, what are you saying to yourself? And really get into it. It might take a second, but once you start writing them, you'll start hearing them, right? I'm not enough. I'll never be there. I'll never really be successful. I'm so scared. Whatever those things are, right? And list them out. Just seeing them takes away their power. It's as if you've now backed up and you've decided to look at the lens that you're looking through. And I often tell this story about that I heard Tony Robbins tell once, and I think it's a really good illustration of why this is important, right? Imagine you and I are in the middle of a huge conference, right? Like a Tony Robbins conference, right? And all of a sudden, all the lights go out, and there's no lights outside, there's no lights anywhere. It's just pitch black, and everybody gets up, and everybody's moving around, and chairs are moving and all that, and everybody's trying to get to the exits, right? With the lights off, that's incredibly difficult. Maybe not impossible, but you're not going to get there quick. You're going to bump your leg. People are going to be in your way. You're going to slowly be going, right? It's going to be horrible. Well, in the middle of you trying to get to the exit, all of a sudden somebody turns on the lights, right? And in that moment, now you can see all the obstacles. You can see the chairs. You can navigate your life much more easily. While we remain unconscious of our negative thinking about ourselves and the world, it's like we're in the dark, right? We're just bumping into things. We don't see them. We're not dealing with it, right? You need to objectify them and move them out. So awareness, just actually listing them out and seeing what the heck you're dealing with, begins that process. And awareness itself is often curative, because we'll look at it and we'll go, that's not true. Or, you know, a lot of it will heal just in that process. So I highly recommend people absolutely do that, right? The second one is to consciously challenge them, right? Start to move them around and talk yourself out of them. And ultimately, the practice of this is really to hear those while they're going on and just, you know, debate them, denounce them, just get them out of there, right? Like they're not useful thinking, right? So what we're trying to optimize is useful thought. So step two is to literally challenge these, right? So if it says, you know, I'll never make a lot of money, challenge that. I will make a lot of money, right? It's just a much more useful thought, right? And come up with, like, what would the counter arguments to these things be? And ultimately, if you just thought of, you know, I'm not a huge affirmations guy, but there's a little bit of like an affirmation quality to this, right? If you actually just kind of resonated with these and thought about them, it's just a much more useful way to be. If I had a list of 10 negative thoughts and 10 really positive or opposite thoughts to those, I could spend the next 10 minutes kind of, you know, unconsciously going over the first list. And I would, you know, if I thought before a sales call, this isn't going to work out, people don't like me, I'm not very good at this, right? That's going to invite or put out the empty chair for the other guy to just sit in and go, you're right, you're not good at this. Like, I'm not going to give you the same, right? We end up making our beliefs true in our life. So instead, if I think, you know what, I'm really good at this, I'm going to make a connection here, just something that's more useful. We don't have to make a new thought that's totally unbelievable to us, but just something that's maybe more neutral or just a little bit more believable, right? Now you have your top list. The third step is something that I created called repatterning, right? Which actually gets this into the subconscious, because that's where these things are kind of coming out of. And I'd like to, if we have a minute, I'd love to share a little bit more about the subconscious. But step three is really repatterning these so that the new thoughts that are going to make up this new identity about yourself are actually automatic. They're actually the new unconscious choice of your self-concept, essentially, right? So it's great to do all this stuff with our conscious mind, but our conscious mind is not the most powerful thing. And we were talking before about how, you know, we try to stay safe, right? I have an example where people act against their own best interest to even not stay safe, but just to stay in the familiar, right? They stay in the familiar. And the example that I use is like a woman who's battered repeatedly, right? So often, a huge percentage of those people go back to the battered situation, right? They go back to the battered situation because their motivation isn't pleasure and pain, right? It's familiarity and pain, right? We're definitely trying to escape pain, but we're trying to move toward the familiar. Our subconscious is trying to keep us in the familiar because it's known. And so to a woman who keeps going back, people go, why are you going back? What's going on? It's because the unknown is even more scary than what they already know they've survived and what they know they can get, right? And so what happens to us is with this subconscious identity, if we don't edit that, we end up staying at the level, you know, that we think we deserve. And really profound growth and profound change eludes most people. It just doesn't, you know, we make these little incremental changes and we don't really ever kind of explode with a new change. So the repatterning process actually takes this through imagining in these different ways, and then actually gets it into our emotional body so that we feel it in a different way, because that's what actually connects it with the subconscious mind. And then what you find is these new behaviors, these new thoughts about yourself, these new actions that are included in it when I work with people, you don't have to use willpower to do them. They just start happening kind of on autopilot, just like, you know, your subconscious actually makes you do a lot of behaviors, you know, without us even trying. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really helpful. So awareness, you know, challenge that thinking, and then the repatterning is, I mean, a really useful practical steps that we can take. Give me a give me a best case of what this has looked like for someone who came to you at point A, and after working with you, you know, they were at point B. What's some, you talked about the battered, abused woman. Give me one of the stories you love sharing of how someone started and where they're at.
Well, I think, you know, we all eat food, right? So I think people that are dealing with weight and body image and all that is a pretty standard story. And one of the things that I tell is a woman who is, you know, more than 100 pounds overweight, comes to me, actually gets to the point, and it's important to sometimes to kind of get disgusted with, you know, your results or your behaviors or something, right?
That's the light switch I was talking about, right?
Yeah, that can often be like, this is enough, right? I've hit my bottom line. So, you know, imagine this woman actually getting truly disgusted. But what happens to her, you know, she says, no more cake, right? I'm not going to eat any more cake. I'm not going to have any donuts. I'm not doing any of this stuff.
I've never said that, by the way.
You know, yeah, I'm done, right? I'm finished. That's it. I'm going to go on this diet and it's going to be done. She's truly been in and out of this forever. But she truly got to the end of her rope and she's like, this is it. And what you find many times in that is that by noon or whatever, she's saying, no, I don't want to. Like, her mind is literally resisting, but her hand is truly putting the cake toward her face. And she actually just takes another bite and she goes, well, maybe tomorrow, you know, maybe I'll get it tomorrow. And so, and that's our subconscious just going, you know what? Your identity is a big fat, and if you ask this woman, a big fat loser, right? You're somebody who, you know, doesn't succeed, can't change, you're unattractive, you're big, heavy, all that stuff, right? So when I work with somebody like that, I ask them, like, what do you say to yourself? And that's what you hear, you know, I'm fat, I'm a loser, I'll never change, this will never work, nobody loves me, I'm disgusting, right? I hate myself, I hate my body, right? These horrible things that are very real that she's saying to herself, right? Well, if that's the story of her identity, her subconscious is going to make that true for her. She's going to say, okay, that's great. Then we eat cake. That's what we do, right? So what I got her to realize was, let's implant this idea of I am an athlete. Okay. And so when we repatterned some things that made up this idea of I am an athlete, right? What's an athlete do? Well, an athlete might have cake. They might not have as much. They might work out if they have it, but they're active, right? They care about what they eat. They treat food as fuel, right? Not an emotional thing, right? And as you do this, this is a woman who ends up going to spin class. And before you know it, she's down 20 pounds, but she's so passionate. She's going, she's really changed. She's really gotten it ingrained. At 80 pounds down, she becomes a spin instructor, right? Why? Because, well, she's an inspiration. People actually love her. They know her story now. They know this is all going on. She's committed to this. Before you know it, she's losing the whole thing. She's running triathlon. She's doing all this different stuff, right? That's the possibility of what can happen, right? It's true to go from I am a loser, this will never work, to I am an athlete. Because when you have an identity of, let's say, I am an athlete, right? All the behaviors that you want are wrapped up in that identity. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, even so, another one. And even as you said that, I mean, it was just like, as I was thinking to myself, you know, just saying that I am an athlete, it's like you make different choices.
Totally.
Just
it changes
based
the whole
self-talk.
It changes the whole context, right?
You wouldn't think something that simple would be that effective, but I literally did it when you were saying it because I don't consider myself to be an athlete. I mean, I eat, you know, whatever.
Sure.
You know, and so,
and you could be a 100-pound overweight athlete, right? It's like, I'm not the best athlete, you know, maybe I'm not winning any, but I'm an athlete, right? So if you actually take that on, the behaviors start to come with it. So, you know, another one is, and I don't know what level most of your listeners are. I work with a lot of people who are struggling at an entrepreneurial level. Maybe they're established, but they can't break through to the next level. Many of them are just starting out and they're trying to become entrepreneurs.
Let's ask them. Send me an email. What level are you on? Rob wants to know. I do want to know.
So let's, for example of this, think about somebody who's trying to become an entrepreneur, right? They're trying to escape the 9-to-5. Maybe they're trying to become. And when you ask them, hey, what do you do at a party? They don't say, I'm an entrepreneur. They say, I work as an engineering job and I'm trying to start this side business, right? What I do with people is I get them to shift that, not just in some bullshit way that they're sharing that's not real for them. I actually get them to embody, no, I'm an entrepreneur now. I may still need to learn stuff. I may, you know, need to figure some things out, but I'm an entrepreneur. Like, that's what I am. Because an entrepreneur makes sales calls. An entrepreneur, you know, looks at the numbers. An entrepreneur, you know, thinks about creating a business, blowing life into it and moving along and doing the next one or whatever the stuff is, right? So when people have, like, I'm not an entrepreneur yet, or I want to be an entrepreneur, right? That's an incredibly valuable shift for some people. Another one might be, you know, I'm an eight-figure entrepreneur instead of I'm a seven-figure entrepreneur, right? When you own that, whatever your next level is, when you own that and think about it, like, what is that guy who's an eight figure, if you're not yet, what does he walk around thinking? How big's his team? What's he do? Like, own that stuff, right? Normalize it for you. So what I do with people is I help them normalize that. And this is, you know, this is one of the big things I do with people. This is one of the breakthrough things that I do with people that gets them massively different results. And then they're left in this new way with all these behaviors wrapped up into it. And, you know, they're literally like a new person.
Yeah.
We've literally shifted their identity.
Yeah, and I can see how that would be incredibly powerful. I mean, I am a full-figured entrepreneur. I mean, that's what I say. Yeah, not an eight-figure. I'm just a full-figured entrepreneur.
So I love that.
Yeah, that's what I dance with. But yeah, man, no, very, very helpful stuff. And so, you know, as we wrap up here, what I'd love for you to do is, you know, go as far left or right as you possibly can on something. But if you could dismantle like one element of the status quo as you know it, what would you dismantle and how would you do it?
Yeah. So
what just pisses you off the most right now?
Well, we're all delusional and we don't know it, right? So you know, all right? Not absolutely all of us, but the great majority of us are delusional. We're looking through those lenses and we're not aware of it. My company is called Fundamental Shift, and the gift that I want to give the whole world, if I can, is this level of awareness where we can see the lenses that we're looking through. I literally see it as the next level of consciousness for us. It's the next evolution. It's a paradigm shift for most people, and it's actually dead simple. I see Bill Gates, who I adore. I think he's a brilliant man, wildly successful, you know, all this stuff. And I use him as an example because he's full-time philanthropic now for many, many years. He has more access to wealth than probably anybody, right? His own and plenty of other billionaires that have pledged their money. And he's earnestly trying to solve the biggest problems on the planet. And he's solving a ton of them and he's amazing. And I'm like a huge fan of what he's doing. But when I heard that like one of the biggest things that he wanted to solve was mosquitoes and malaria, right? And he's got a great reason for that. It's practical, it's solvable, it's all this stuff. But there's something about that I sit back and I go, that's not the fundamental thing. It's almost like it's whack-a-mole. All these external problems that we're trying to solve, it's like as soon as we solve that one, there'll be another one. There'll be another, you know, government that's bombing people and causing wars. There'll be this other thing, right? What I see as the fundamental issue is our own lack of awareness of how we see. Of this level of awareness of what our lenses are. And there's a fundamental shift, which is the name of my company, in being able to back up our lens of awareness or our frame of awareness to see the lenses with which we see. And when we do that, we can alter them. And if you think about that, you talked about left and right, and obviously there's sort of a political, bent to that, right? So if we think of politically, right, think of somebody way on the right who's got their lens of republicanism, right? And they're just sure that's truth. They're just absolutely sure that's truth. And somebody on the way, way, way left, right, is looking through their lens and they're just absolutely sure that's true. And the reality is because they can't see that they're looking through lenses, because they can't see that they're doing that and that there's more available to them. Like my dad, we've already talked about him. He's so assured of his political views that they're truth and that they're right, that he's completely limited to even seeing anything outside that, right? Can't even have the discussion. And the reality is that most times all our issues and are much more complex than just, you know, this is the way that's true. This is the way that's right. So another reason why I'm not that concerned with truth, because truth depends on perspective and which way we're looking at it and all that stuff. So the thing that I want to change is I want to help people have a level of awareness so that they can actually see how they see, right? So that they can actually change the lenses with which, as we interpret the world, it goes through these lenses, and that's what makes up our self-concept. That's what makes up our state. And so the shortcut is to learn how to edit how you see. Learn how to, you can still hold any lens you want. It doesn't take anything away from you. It only adds a much greater amount of wisdom and ability to see more truth, see other perspectives. And I promise you that if I debate somebody who's got tunnel vision on what their truth is, I just have more access to consciousness. I have many more perspectives and ways to kind of see how things might go. And we need to start asking that our leaders have this ability. We need to start hoping that the people that run our corporations have this so that we can really solve all the problems that are on our planet. And I think that when we do this, when we actually grow this ability, all the problems that we're facing as humans are greatly solvable. You know, it's not that think tanks don't have the answers to what we should do. And, you know, honestly, things like war and conflict can dramatically go down. We can start to make bigger changes. You know, we have nothing but technological access and abundance to make drastic and profound changes, you know, in our lifetime, yeah, if we were to figure this out. So, yeah, that's what I think is most important. I think that's the game changer.
Yeah, fair enough, man. And, you know, it's interesting. So I like throwing a one word around each of these episodes, and I'm kind of going back and forth here. But I think ultimately you're really just talking about reinventing truth, right? I mean, it's truth as we sit here as individuals. It's truth as we sit here as a society. And, you know, maybe it's reinventing mindset or something of that nature, yeah, right?
But to make it super weird, what I think this is I think it's a form of enlightenment, and I think we have a wrong kind of we tend to think that enlightenment might mean endless bliss or certain happiness. Enlightenment really is the dissolving of illusion, right? It's actually just more access to truth. So one of the things that I'm very, very dedicated to, and I don't often talk about it in my business, but I want to redefine enlightenment. I want to make it much more accessible. I want people to realize that they can actually wake up, and that when you can see these lenses that are clouding how you see or changing it, once you do that, you literally have access to more. It literally adds light to parts of how you see and what you can see. And so it literally brings light or enlightens. Yeah. So I want to redefine enlightenment. That's what I'm up to.
Lots to think about here, my man, and nice. You know, a lot of practical tips that, as I said earlier, you know, with the I am an athlete, I mean, just, you know, four words can really shift one's perspective, and a lot to think about. This is an episode I'll be hitting play and rewind on for a while here, because there's some deep stuff, man. I was really hoping to kind of keep it light and fluffy, but you know, Rob, I mean, we went there, man. So you know, it is. But if people want more information about you, they go to Rob Scott, scott.com. Any freebies, giveaways, any kind of things that to throw in people's hands?
I've got a ton there. Really soon, it's not live yet. It's going to be live pretty soon. I've got a site called identityshifting.com. I've got a podcast that's going to be coming out in the next month or so called the Conscious Evolution Podcast. And if they do go to Rob Scott, which for right now is really the place to go, there's a free coaching course on there. There's tons of free videos and downloads, and really, really, it's a content-rich place that with tangible, helpful things. So yeah, go get them.
Nice, my man. Well, again, really appreciate you being on Reinvention Radio, and for now, until we talk again, Rob, thanks so much for being here, and we'll be back with another episode of Reinvention Radio, where we dismantle the status quo. Talk to you soon.
All right, thanks.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Olsher, visit reinventionradio.com.